We welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Java Persistence Architecture, JPA. The presenters are William L. Gilchrist, Jerry Poon, and Heath Tolman. Al and Jerry are WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support engineers on the WASCET team. Heath is a WebSphere Application Server Level 3 support engineer. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Jerry.
Hi, good morning. My name is Jerry. Today's agenda, we're going to talk about first introduction of Java Persistent Architecture, Apache JPA, JPA for WebSphere Application Server, version of a JPA for WebSphere Application Server, JPQL, Persistence XML, and then troubleshooting JPA. Slide 3. On this slide, we're going to talk about the introduction of JPA. JPA is not a new technology. It's a lightweight module. It basically collects all the best exceeding persistent technology into a standardized persistent technology. Okay? And it provides relational mapping approach. It basically means that it converts the different data between different programming language into different programming language such as Java or C sharp. The primary use of the JPA is to code your application to access data in the database. Slide 4. On this slide, we're going to talk a little bit about Apache OpenJPA. Apache OpenJPA is some microsystem technology. Since the JPA for Web Application Server is built from OpenJPA, a lot of OpenJPA functionality extension is not affected. User can run the OpenJPA application. You do not make any change to your application. There's two ways that you could implement the OpenJPA with the WebSphere. The first method is add a property line in your persistent XML file. There's a slash in front of the end of the first example that should not be there. Okay. The second method is use command line, JVM command line, and you could can add that to the JVM command line to implement the OpenJPA. Slide 5. In this slide, we're going to talk a little bit about enhanced JPA for Web Application Server. There are about 7 here. First one, enhanced tracing support. For most of issues, we have a standard trace that we ask customer to trace. In addition, we do have enhanced trace support that can enable to collect more detailed data. The first in ID generation, application server has extended OpenJPA to work with database generate version IDs, such as a timestamp and token. It basically supports all the database that WebSphere server supports. The next one's object grid cache plugin support. It's basically a general term for data cache and query cache implementation. WebSphere Extreme Scale provides both data cache and query cache implementations for OpenJPA. The next one is WebSphere product specific command and scripts. Basically, this just gives you, allow you to use commands and scripts for configuration and administration purpose. The next one is translate message file. JPA for web application server has extended JPA with national language support. Basically, you can use that, allow you to use it with this NLS, national language support. The next one is static SQL support using DB2 Pure Query feature. Pure Query feature is a feature from the DB2. So, but the OpenJPA supports that. It allows you to access database using static SQL. The next one is access intent support. It basically controls the JDBC isolation level, whether you read, update, or exclusive logs are acquired when retrieving the data. Slide 6. Okay, on this slide, we're going to talk about the difference between WebShift 7 and Apache OpenJPA 1.2. From version 7, JPA for Web Application Server, will allow you to use this three properties. The first property is OpenJPA compatibility. By default, the OpenJPA is set false. JPA for Web Application Server is set to truth. What this do is it imitate the behavior of the previous OpenJPA releases. So if you have an older function with OpenJPA that you would like to have, this enable this property can allow you to have that same function. The next one is OpenJPA Runtime Unenhanced class. By default, OpenJPA is set into support, and WebShift is set to warning. This property controls how OpenJPA handles classes. It's not been enhanced by enhancer tool or automatically by a Java agent. So, for example, JPA for WebShift is set to warm, so OpenJPA will not create a subclass for unenhanced entity class, but will log as a warning message. The next one is the OpenJPA Dynamic Enhancement Agent. This property controls whether or not OpenJPA will attempt to dynamically load this enhancer Java agent. Okay, next slide. Slide 7. This slide, we're going to talk about the version 8.0, 8.5 versus Apache OpenJPA 2.2. The property here is pretty much the same as previous slide. On 8.0 and 8.5.5 and OpenJPA 2.2, there's one additional property. It's OpenJPA driver data source. By default, OpenJPA is auto. JPA for WebShift application server is set to simple. Okay. This property implements is the default and will select either DB CP driver data source or a simple driver data source. So let's say by default, Apache OpenJPA has set to auto by default. And then if you have a DBCP driver data source, it will select that. But if you don't, then it will select simple driver data source. And versus JPA for WebShift application server, by default, it selects simple driver data source. So the simple implementation of the JDBC data source interface configure a plain old JDBC driver bin properties. And they return a new connection on from every gate connection calls. So basically, this is not a full-blown connection pool. Okay, it's a lightweighted connection pooling, but it will give you a new connection on every call. Slide 8, please. At this slide, we're going to talk a little bit about the version of JPA used with the WebSphere application server. The WebSphere application server 6.1 first implement the feature pack EJB 3.0 and Java Persistent API 1.0. And later on, the version 7 ship with the OpenJPA version 1.2, but also include JPA 2.0. In the version 8.0.8.5.8.5.5, it's all ship with JPA 2.0 and higher. Okay, there's a few new features that was introduced after JPA 2.0, such as the Java Persistent Query Language, and also the most significant feature is the Java Criteria API, which is a programmatic way to create a dynamic queries. So the AO, as I mentioned earlier, AO ship with a JPA 2.1, and the A5 is shipped with OpenJPA version 2.2, and also A55 as well is 2.2. And now I'm going to turn over to my colleague Al Gilchrist to talk about the functionality JPA provides.
Slide 9, please. Functionality for JPA. JPA is a simplified programming model, and it is made up to access the database from the WebSphere application server or in other systems just made to access database. That's its main purpose in WebSphere application server is to access database from the application server, and it's to access a database so that you can do upkeep and so forth on your database information. There are things in JPA that are called entities. The entities are a definition, basically, of the columns and rows, the columns that you have in your database for each row. It allows the interface to the database when you start to work with the entities and compile everything. You enhance the entities or augment them, and code is generated and placed into class files that will allow the actual application to contact the database and work with the database. Slide 10, please. JPA with respect to WebSphere application servers. WebSphere application servers, since version 6.1 and higher, have offered feature packs and or built-in JPA. With that said, there are basically two ways that you can access the database from WebSphere application server. One is to use Enterprise Java Entity Beans, and the other is to use JPA. In recent years, JPA has become more common and more used than Entity Beans, because it's easier to use the JPA than it is to go back and set up Entity Beans. But we do support both, because some of the legacy applications were created with Entity Beans, and we don't want to cause our customers to have to change a bunch of code just to upgrade. Also note that WebSphere application servers allows the use of a third-party persistence providers such as Spring and Hibernate and all of that kind of stuff. But anyway, we do allow that as well. Slide 11, please. The next slide talks about JPQL or the query language, Java Persistence Query Language, that is used in conjunction with JPA to allow you to manipulate data in the database. This could be a full presentation on this one slide. So if you need to have more information on that, I've given you a URL there so that you can get more information from Oracle about JPQL. And JPQL is like structured query language in that some of the commands are very similar and the same, and in some cases they are exactly the same. And JPQL is used to interact with your target databases and to allow you to manipulate and exercise the data. Slide 12, please. The persistence.xml file requires the use of an XML file, and it's in the meta-inf directory called persistence.xml. And in the persistence.xml, it gives you information. It allows information to be conveyed and to be used by the JPA applications to access the database. And some of the things that would be in there would be like username and password. Slide 13, please. If you need to read the full description of the persistence.xml, I'm giving you the slide or the actual OpenJPA tutorial there that will allow you to see all of the information that you would ever need, I believe, from the Apache site for JPQL. Also in JPA, there is an ORM file, or I call them an ORM file, and they're used to actually set class paths and things to tell where other parts of the application are located. Because in certain larger applications, you have multiple libraries and multiple class paths that will allow you allow work. And if you don't... you basically don't tell where some of these things are, they will not be found, or either the application will have to search through a bunch of class paths to find the actual methodology that they use. So therefore, we have the ORM file. And there's more information in the Apache documentation about the ORM file as well. So if you would please move on to slide 14. In this slide, we put a basic rudimentary way, a set of procedures basically to access a database. You have to go in into your favorite IED, which I use Rational Application Developer and sometimes Eclipse. You go in there and you create a JPA project. And in the JPA project, you include the class path for your JDBC driver, or you can use a data source. You add the JPA. You get the JPA file from your Apache site or use the one in the SDK that's provided. You modify the persistence.xml file to put in your password and so forth for your database. You set up that small application with one entity or a couple of entities, depending on what you want to do, which tables you want to use, and as we said before, the entities basically is a description of the tables, the architecture in the table, and it is augmented or is enhanced at compile time to allow access to the database and use of the information there. And then you create a Java bean or a driving program to exercise the entities in the manner that you want to use them in a Java bean or a Java application. Then you'd run the Java, the driving application as a Java Bean or a Java application. And that's about the best way I can tell you to do it, just in a slide, without, you know, showing you a bunch of code and things like that. So if you would, go on to slide 15. Now, I want to talk to you about troubleshooting methods that basically we use in IBM support to look at JPA issues. Now, when you're thinking of troubleshooting JPA, especially in an application server, you have the JPA part, you have Java Transaction Service, you have J2C, and servlets and all that kind of stuff that can come into play in an application. So what we try to do is we break this down into smaller groups, and if we feel like it's a transaction issue, we use transaction traces. If we feel like it's a EJB or a J2C problem, we Java 2 architecture, we use J2C traces and so forth to troubleshoot the problem. But since JPA is basically taken from the open JPA that Apache has made, there's not as much enhanced tracing in that area as there is in to other modules for WebSphere application server. So what we try to do in support is we try to take the entities from the get that entities from the customer that send us the problem, and we put those entities into a small program and exercise them and read the Java SE logs that come out, because they actually give you a little bit more information than you could actually get from running a trace on it in some cases. Because each line that is in the application is basically talked about in the logs that you get back from the SE program. So we break it down into its parts, and we're accessing, in this case, only the JPA part, and we are doing our best to eliminate as much of the application server as possible. With that said, we take the JDBC driver files and include those into the class path. We don't use a data source. We do use the SDK, but we also get a version from Apache or wherever of the JPA that is being used, and we use that in our class paths going forward with testing. Slide number 16, please. And the idea behind this is to, first of all, see if the JPA part works, to see if we can isolate the problem or reproduce the problem only in JPA without the use or any, as our developer calls it, the noise of the database or the application server. We try to just make sure that we can reproduce the problem, and if it's a pure JPA problem or if it has something to do with the application server, J2C, JTS, and all of that kind of stuff. And in that situation, we end up producing a very simplified test case that we hope will reproduce the problem that's being reported. Slide 17, please. And we have found that if we create small app, if we make it a Java SE program rather than an EE program, the logs and things are simplified, and we have we can get closer to the problem. And this eliminates a lot of time and saves a lot of time reproducing a problem and trying to troubleshoot a problem in a huge application. We recommend our customers do that too if they run into a JPA problem. And we basically we try to eliminate the WebSphere application server and just try to see what we can get done out of a just an SE program that is set up for JPA. Slide 18, please. Now, as I mentioned before, the stars of the show basically are the entities, the representation of the database tables that get enhanced at compile time and augmented to have access and so forth to the database. We take those entities, we add the J2C or the JWC driver. We create a driver program or a bean that will drive the entities in the fashion that they're used in the program, and we run them as a Java SE bean or a small application to get the information that we need to see if we can reproduce the problem. Slide 19, please. Once you have these things working, you can take the logs, the output of the logs, and see if, you know, note the problems and see exactly what's happening, because it shows you all of the steps that happen under the covers and what's being called under the covers by the particular commands and stuff, and the deeper into methodology and so forth, and nested and all of that. It shows you all the information. Page 20, please. If you are able to reproduce the error in your code, the best way, or in your test app, it's good to go to the Apache site that I've got shown in the URL there and look up a Jira, J-I-R-A, and see if you find a Jira that matches the problem that you are trying to, that you did reproduce, and see if there is a fix for it. And if you do not find a Jira, or if you do find a Jira and you want to send it all to IBM, please make sure that you include a Jira, the number for the Jira, with what you're sending. Yeah, say, hey, this is very much like what I'm having, problem I'm having, and we'll work with it from there. Slide 21, please. Now, if you have a situation where you do find the Jira, and if you do need to send the WebSphere application server support, please be ready to send your JPA entities, the simple application that you created, the persistence.xml, and if specified, send traces that we ask you for. I can't stress to you enough that when you get it down into the small program, it's very important for you to explain the use case as deeply as possible and to us, because every little bit can help. Some of these problems are very difficult to reproduce and see. Some are easy. But all the help you can give us as far as the description of the problem will save us from having to come back to you and get more information. So if you would go to slide number 22, please. The tracing that we would normally request from you would be JPA all and OpenJPA all. That's the normal tracing. At some point, we may have to come back and ask you for more enhanced tracing that is available, as Jerry spoke about earlier in his slide. I believe it was slide number 5. We may have to come back and ask for that, or if you haven't supplied a test case, we may have to work with you to get a test case. It's just better to do one up front than it is waiting. Now, I know I hear a lot of customers say, well, we can't recreate this in a test case. It's very possible that you can if you use the entities. Just pull the entities that are giving you the problem and create you a small bean that will drive those entities in some kind of fashion that resembles what you have in your application code. Slide 23, please. In that slide, I've given you a couple of websites of interest that are above and beyond what has been mentioned in the in the previous slides in the presentation. And we've done a lot of research in those areas, and that we'll hope that those will find you will find those very interesting and very helpful. Slide 24, please. Now, in summary, we have talked about the introduction to Java Persistence Architecture. We've talked about the versions of JPA and WebSphere application servers. We've spoken about JPQL, persistence.xml, and use JPA to access a database. We've spoken of troubleshooting JPA. And hope that all helps you out some going forward. And I can't stress to you enough the importance of creating a small application with your entities if you have a JPA problem in and of itself. Kathy, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Okay, thank you, Al and Jerry, for a great presentation. And now moving on to the question and answer session. We do have one question in our web conference. In the previous slide, it was mentioned that there is no tracing available as it is an open source. What about the last comment, info, quote, JPA equals all, open GPA equals all?
In that, there is tracing available, but the tracing is not as robust. We found that it's difficult to really get down into the performance and what JPA is doing using the tracing that we have for OpenJPA. JPA is basically an open source architecture, and it is Apache mainly, so we don't have as much depth of tracing in those as we do other WebSphere application server modules. Heath, if you can expound on that, that would be great.
Yeah, no, you said it correctly. In WebSphere, we have a rather strict set of requirements on our tracing. And maybe we've become a little bit spoiled because of that, because we have to follow a certain set of guidelines. We get a very in-depth amount of trace. Because we're dealing with open source, there are not the same guidelines in place as far as tracing goes. So some areas of the code spit out a lot of trace, really good amount of trace, and other areas could use a little more.
Oh, also, I would like to add this. If you do run into a problem and you do see an opportunity saying, hey, if I had a decent message here in my traces, that is a perfect opportunity to put in a serviceability defect that would be analyzed and possibly implemented. So, help us out in that area. Please put in a serviceability defect if you do find such a situation.
Okay, thank you. We do have another question. This is in reference to a tech doc number 1413161. On it is a problem abstract says if multiple persistent units are defined in a persistent.xml in IBM Rational Application Developer for the WebSphere software version 7.5, attempts to open the persistent.xml file results in a warning message stating that multiple persistent units is not supported. The question in the chat is, they've still seen this issue in RAD 8.0 and in RAD 8.5. Is that resolved in version 9?
We do not know anything about version 9 at this point and are not authorized nor able to speak about anything. It was version 9. We don't know if there even will be a version 9. So that's proprietary information, and we can't discuss that.
But it does sound like a possible PMR to take forward to rational.
That's true. That or a serviceability defect, either one.
There are no more questions in the web conference. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Al, Jerry, and Heath for presenting today.